Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
The following radio show is a live recording of the I Survived Real Estate event on August 23rd, 2008. The event brought together realtors, auctioneers, investors, mortgage professionals, economists, data providers, and builders to discuss how we got here, how the respective industries are changing, and how we move forward and prosper together in 2008 and beyond. Proceeds from the event went to the Orange County affiliate of the Susan G. Komen for the Cure. The event would not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: the San Diego Creative Investment Association and President Bill Tan, the Investors Workshops of Orange County and President Sean Watkins, MVT Productions, the audio video master behind the spectacular live production, White House Catering, who provided superb cuisine and outstanding service for the live event, Fry Wiles, the web development, internet marketing, and creative design firm that created the event site iSurvive2008.com, Proxibid, the online auction platform that aired the entire event online nationwide live, the Nixon Library, Pechanga Resort and Casino, the Chicago Bulls, the Denver Nuggets, and the Cleveland Cavaliers. See iSurvive2008.com for pictures, video, and more details on this historic event, brought to you by the Norris Group.
I'm sure this isn't popular because I'm in the state of California, but whoever put up the map where you had the orange blocks, who had that?
Orange?
You remember the orange blocks, and you know, like Phoenix and Las Vegas and California? Well, you realize that during this entire period of time that we're all talking about, you could have gone to Carolina and Georgia and Oklahoma and Texas, and on and on and on.
We
and
did.
Bought that same house at that time for years and years and years for half of what you could of all those markets that are now orange. What you have, those markets that are orange, were so tremendously overheated by a variety of different things, they had to come back to normal. And normal still is the entire United States of America, in my opinion. And so when you get way out of balance, any place, way out of balance, you will have to seek normal again. And, of course, when we travel around selling homes, we happen to find what normal is. Yes, Bruce?
You know, what's interesting is if you had auctioned off a house in 2005,
yes,
you would have found normal probably 20% more than the builders thought they would get, because there was so much velocity to the emotion of buying that product. So you're right. The auction proves the truth. Now, I wanted to get back to what you were saying. I love California because it's got velocity both up and down. I've invested in Texas. It hasn't been really exciting.
Boy,
it doesn't move the bit. I know that California is volatile, but it gets what happens is we get to go up again because people want to be here more than they want to be in Oklahoma. I like the fact that it's volatile. I can count on the fact we're going to get unreasonable again, and I'm going to profit by it and get out close to the peak, I hope,
well,
and enjoy it over and over again.
Well, the bottom line is, though, you do have to accept it when you're on the roller coaster going down.
You betcha.
That's the only thing
you
that I was making, point
and
I was making.
And to know that it's coming in advance is a big help.
By the way, though, come to Oklahoma. It's a fabulous place.
But does it go up much? No.
It's okay.
Fannie and Freddie, are we going to have them in existence under their current private ownership for the remainder of this year? Who wants to chime in on that?
I think someone said before, you were talking about a bunch of rules done on a knee-jerk basis, I think is what was the exact word. And what I actually had a question going through my mind. Has there ever been a law or policy passed that wasn't a knee-jerk reaction?
Not that I'm aware of.
So, and this goes back to the answer to your question. Who knows? Who knows what they're going to do with Fannie and Freddie? They're clearly insolvent. They clearly will not exist in their current form, but what are they going to do about it? I don't know. I mean, it could be as simple as I'm simply giving them cash, taking a big preferred equity stake, and they continue to exist at the taxpayer expense. It could be something as draconian as completely taking them over, nationalizing them, giving them to the Fed, break them up in pieces, and sell them off into private companies. Who knows?
Okay, go ahead. I've read, and there was one piece of legislation. It was the Anti-Knee-Jerk Legislation Act of 1942. It took them 7 years to pass the bill. I'm not picking on economists here, but I've read two perfectly thoughtful, logical, well-thought dissertations in the last 3 days. One suggested that the absolutely correct answer was to privatize them entirely, get the government out. The other suggested that the perfect solution was have the government take them over completely. And I came away reading both of them thinking, boy, that's the right answer. And I think, you know, I got into a heated debate with somebody on a Fox broadcast who said that Fannie and Freddie were at the heart of the foreclosure problem, which is one of the stupider things I've heard. And because they didn't buy most of these loans.
They would have been. If they could have been, they would have been.
They would have. If they could have, they would. The management was bad enough that I agree with you. So I think you're going to see something left because you don't just make $5 trillion go away.
No, I hope not.
But you know, well, we're doing our best.
I'm doing my best by buying as low as I can.
I think if anybody has that the secret formula for what's left at the end of this for Fannie and Freddie, I haven't seen it yet.
You know, I guess one of why I asked the question is okay. Let's whatever scenario plays out involves writing big checks. Is that ultimately going to be inflationary? And are we going to be looking at interest rates that are much different 2 or 3 years from now? What do you think?
Well, there's two ways of paying the bills. One way is to print the money and pay the bills. And the other one is to issue debt. Our government still has the functional confidence of the world investor community. And as long as they continue to have that confidence, they can do all the debt they want. It won't have inflationary pressures. It's if you start to see, you know, the bottom drop out of the public bond market and treasuries start to go crazy, well, yeah, then they have to turn the printing press on. But I think the U.S. is really far from that at this point in time.
So. Okay.
That was almost bullish.
Almost.
Interest rates, then? You don't expect to see interest rates do anything?
I think interest rates are doing exactly what we expected them to do. They're finally starting to reflect the risk that's out there. I mean, you're starting to see the spreads widen because, guess what? The financial markets are a mess, gee.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be a trend that's going to continue for a while as a result of the risk that's in the market. And eventually, as this passes, they'll start to come back down again to that, no, like I said before, that new long-run low level that we sort of have to appreciate. I mean, we have to understand we live in a world of diminished returns. And that's the kind of world we're moving into right now. So,
you know, when I first got into the business and refied my house at 17 and a half, and I got to refi it again at 12, and I thought it was a really good deal. And there was a lot of people that were very smart telling me that you're never going to see anything that's single digit again. And now we've been really spoiled by seeing 5% interest rates, and now we're at 6.5%, and everybody thinks that's really a bad thing. I think, you know, it's interesting, in the study of all of this, interest rates can be very high, be double digit, and you could still have a real estate boom as long as the monthly number still makes sense in relationship to what people make. So the price skewing down low enough would make room for an interest rate hike, and it would still have a healthy real estate market if that had to happen.
You gave us a lecture over at Realty Track one day, which I now quote liberally. But you were talking about, you know, V-shaped markets and U-shaped markets. And one of the things you talked about that really stuck with me was the inflection point, which is that in most of these cycles, you hit an inflection point where the prices drop far enough and the interest rates are favorable enough and the affordability index is right and people come off the sidelines. And when you start talking about a 65% price drop and a 6.5% interest rate, you'd figure you'd see more buyers coming to the market than what you're currently seeing. And I can't help but think that a lot of this is market psychology.
Oh, absolutely.
That the lenders are afraid to lend because they don't know how far down is. And the buyers are waiting for a bottom that they can't see with a telescope. And I do believe that in addition to and I think you were the one that brought this up, Chris, in addition to the fact that $300 billion FHA program is really aimed more at keeping the bank solvent than it is about keeping people in their homes, I think it's trying to jolt confidence back into the marketplace and say it's okay to get back in the water because we took all the really bad sharks out.
You know, one of the things that's happened this time is the velocity of the change in price has been unprecedented in anything I've ever studied. So this price change of 35 to 50% has got to shock people. As a matter of fact, they apparently aren't even unaware of it. That was what was interesting. There was some type of, you saw that survey?
Yeah, it was a Zillow study that showed that I think it was 7 out of 10 people thought their particular home was still appreciating.
What's that word? You have...
The word I use is home hallucination.
Home hallucination.
The ability to convince oneself that while the price of everybody else's home has fallen, your neighborhood is clearly different.
I'm sure every time Tommy auctions a house, he's got one of those.
I must tell you, the ad on the Tulsa television today says exactly that. It says all the other markets are bad, but guess what? In Tulsa, they're going up. And that is what the ad says.
Well, it's nice if we feel that way, because then we buy some more. So that's part of it. Phil, we've talked a few times, and are lenders now skewing to so conservative that they're not making loans that are so safe it's ridiculous at this point? Are they not making those loans?
Yeah. I mean, you can hear it. You know, I think part of the magnification of the problem has been, you know, the automated underwriting, as you mentioned. You know, the automated underwriting was such a blessing, because it was just one of those things that if someone had a certain credit score, certain ratio, certain income, boom, automatic approval, goes straight to, and Fannie and Freddie would buy it. Now they've just you know, turned off the spigot, the water spigot. So now the credit score is both, so it's, instead of being this, needs to be this, ratios need to be this, and it's just derided up. I can't tell you how often... what I'm seeing right now, people putting 50% down. I had have a client buying a $2 million property, putting 50% down. He's been in the commercial broker for the past, you know, X number of years.
I feel awful with that guy. You know.
And he can't get financing because his credit score is too low. And it's just a point of needing to get his credit score up until he'll be fine. But, I mean, literally 50% down. I have another client right now I'm dealing with.
I know a hard money lender that would go for that.
But I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we are seeing hard money lenders literally. I mean, they're picking up the slack.
Oh my goodness!
Huge, huge resource.
Okay, so that's part of the emotional cycle that goes on, not just with a buyer who's afraid, but it's everywhere. Everyone's afraid.
Whoa! Those automated systems were a disaster. I mean, every mortgage broker immediately figured out how to game those things, and the reason they're getting turned off is that was one of the problems.
Oh, I totally agree. But my point is what I say, the greatest blessing to get the liquidity in the market, which obviously took us to where we're at. But that's why it's so magnified. It's so magnified, and it's so quick, down 50% or whatever it is.
But again, the price mechanism is fixing this. Everybody's going to qualify. It's just a function of prices falling far enough.
We know, okay, once again, high affordability. Okay, we're going to touch on the Holy Grail here. I'm sorry. I can't resist, though. Okay. And you know what? I am open to learn, and this would be the panel that would set me straight. If high affordability solved something, you had the same affordability, 40%, in 1993, 94, 95, 96, and you went down in price. Every one of those years, we didn't go up in price until 97 when we had 40% affordability, but we had the other kicker, we had migration gains. To me, that's the kicker if I'm going to predict when something's coming back, I look at the domino of migration coming back. That is a true indicator of the decline of foreclosures and of inventory. Right now, one other thing, Jen, and I'd love your input on this. We've gone from 16.7 months to, you said six months of inventory or so. Okay, that is a very false indicator, because every private seller that doesn't have to sell isn't in the marketplace. And that's creating a glut of rentals that has another domino. A lot of places, the rentals are going down. But the inventory going down is not what it seems to me.
Well, we want to deal with the inventory first. It is what it seems. Again, the assumption here has to be that 85% of the homes are owner-occupied. So in California, especially in coastal California, There's just not that much rental occurring. That's why we do, you know, it's not accidental that it's Riverside, San Bernardino, and the Central Valley, which were the most affordable places and the highest percentage of investors where you've got the deepest downturn. So, you know, I think your vacant housing stuff is absolutely right, but the vacant housing tends to be in the areas where, one, you have more new construction and you have lower prices and you have more investors. So, yeah, what's happening is if you're someone who doesn't have to sell, you're not selling. But 85% of those aren't renting either. They're just staying in their own home. And that was what happened in the 90s, by the way. First-time buyers, actually, at the boom period, were about 190,000 in 1990, 91. And for most of the period from 94 to 97, when we had a tremendous fall-off, first-time buyers ran between 200,000 and 220,000. What the affordability factor tells you is about first-time buyers. It doesn't tell you about the trade-up market. And then you still have to superimpose on that unemployment rates, which is what killed us in the 90s. And again, you know, is it a perfect indicator of which way the market's going? No, but it's a pretty good indicator of the percentage of first-time buyers in a marketplace, all things being equal. Now, again, remember that the psychology is important. If you think the market's headed down, it doesn't make much difference if it becomes more affordability. If it becomes more affordable, no one wants to catch the falling knife. And let's face it, that's what we're in the middle of right now. On the other hand, you're starting to see something happen. You know, and I don't want to make too much out of it because I think it may be a false dawn. But there are 50% more sales than there were in the fourth quarter of last year. And I don't think it's because lending got that much easier.
No, you know, prices.
You know, and again, I think it's gotten harder for investors, clearly. And I also make the other observation that from a public policy standpoint, which is where I spend a lot of my time, the fact that there's more first-time buyers is a lot easier for me to sell to these guys who don't understand anything, whose eyes glass over very quickly, than it is to say we need to bring more investors in the marketplace. Now, having said that, I think they're going to realize that more investors are exactly what they're going to need for a certain period of time. And I do think a couple of your ideas, going back early, Bruce, to what you said, there's a couple of those that can probably be sold. There's a lot that can't be sold. And when you put all that together, affordability going up is a good thing. That's perceived as a good thing from a public policy standpoint. It does not direct the market one place or the other, and I don't think we ever get in California to the point where everyone can qualify. The fact of the matter is he's got to pay $165,000 the moment he puts the first stick in the ground. I mean, you know, so you've set an artificial floor. Not only that, rich can't build as much as we need should we ever get back in that demographic situation where we're undersupplied with housing. And our vacancy rate, by the way, in California now is finally getting closer, but is still below the national average for vacancies on single-family homes. We've always been a tight vacancy state. I've got a business in Detroit. You know, Detroit has always had about a 15% vacancy rate. And it's not abnormal in Oklahoma. I think last time I looked, it was about 6%, 6.5% vacancy rate because housing is cheap enough. You just keep one around and live in the other one.
Which are the ideas that you thought you wouldn't sell?
I think the hardest one is going to be and I cut my teeth on this issue, as loan assumptions. I don't think we're going to be able to get that done. And I spent the first 6 years of my career doing nothing other than fighting for Wellenkamp and things like that. I do think FHA would be well advised to allow investors back into the marketplace. Is that doable? I think it might be for some short period of time if the stresses continue. I don't think they're going to want to do that a great deal. The 90-day, I think a reasonable case can be made for cutting the 90 days to having some sort of certification on, you know, that there is no fraud occurring, that you actually made the improvements. They've been very burned on those issues. They've been burned on a lot of issues. And again, they slam the door shut after everyone's gone.
Yeah.
But those two, I think, are probably the most doable. The others are going to be tough sledding.
Well, two out of four is, we could, so we have Carr's blessing. You guys go back then?
Well, you know, I think we've been lined up with things like that all along.
I know. I appreciate that. All right. We are almost out of time. Any last comments or suggestions? First of all, I'll ask you one thing. What chart do you look at and say, looks like we're now officially on the road to recovery?
When prices stop falling.
Well, let me jump in on that, by the way. Prices are going to fall for sure between August and December. They always do. I mean, that's a season.
Oh, I'm sorry. When seasonally adjusted prices stop falling.
I'm not done. I'm not done because, you know, the fact of the matter is you've already had an over-adjustment on prices in some areas.
Whoa. Over-adjustment?
Let me finish.
Oh, man, we're almost out of time.
You know, try to, again, those prices you were showing.
Yes.
You got those prices. I don't think at the very bottom end, in the worst marketplaces right now, you're starting to have a situation where you're having overbidding. You're getting 10 or 12 offers, multi-offers. So the prices, in fact, in some neighborhoods are actually already stabilized. It's very small, but even there's parts of Fresno. So you're starting to get the first signs. Now, if you're in the more expensive areas, I think they got a long ways to go, actually. I think it's the reverse pattern that we saw for the last 2 or 3 years. But I think you're actually starting to create that floor. And it's not only the seasonal adjusted aspect. The fact of the matter is, at some point, again, depending on the economy, you wipe Fannie and Freddie out, prices are going to drop another 25% in every area. So it all depends on exactly, you know, what happens. But again, I think the signs are there. And typically what happens is we don't realize it until afterwards. And the signs, you know, how much more housing can you exhaust is really the question. There's not, the difference between us and Florida is there's not an overhang of new housing. It makes a big difference.
I disagree completely.
Well, I again.
So two points, just very quick. First point is...
I'm glad I'm between them.
Yeah. you shouldn't be. Two points. First thing is we have way too many 4,000 square foot houses. That's not what the state needs. The state desperately needs low rent apartments for low income people. That's what the builders should be building.
Let's just make duplexes out of them. Heck with it.
Yeah, well, there you go. Actually, not a bad idea. And you probably use some for the garage too, right?
By the way, Chris, this will be the first year since 1986 that we'll build more multifamily than single family homes.
It's about time. But then the other thing, but that's because single family are down, not because multifamily is up. So keep that in mind. The other thing is unemployment rate 7.3% and rising rapidly. And we do not ignore that. There's a whole other part of this cycle that's coming down on us. And, you know, we can disagree on the statistics all we want. The fact is whatever stability you may see is going to be severely threatened as this economy.
And I agree. And I said that was one of my two wild cards. Because I happen to agree with you. I'm hoping it's doldrums. You think it's worse. Yeah. You know, and if it's worse than doldrums, I agree. But again, you're starting to see it's a very sticky market. Markets are local. I mean, you know, part of this discussion we have here is we're talking in these grandiose terms, but every market is local. I don't think there's any real market of any size where prices haven't come down. But let me assure you, there's a huge difference between San Bernardino and South Bay or the peninsula in San Francisco. The price differentials there are huge. And I don't think it's tied, by the way, to the size of housing because, by and large, in those areas, larger homes have done as well as smaller homes. So, again, the localities where you're starting to see stabilization are definitely in jeopardy. But by the same token, most people miss the bottom. And I suspect many of us will miss it again.
One, I'll just mention, we're going to get to wrap it up. That list that you saw is interesting. Many of those had multiple bids, just so you know. We ended up being the winning bid, not because we were higher than them, but because they knew we would close because we were paying cash. So the multiple bids were higher, but they didn't get it because of the financing problem. But what we honestly have noticed is now we go 2 months later, what we were having to bid on to up to 110 is honestly now 85. It really is. So that number is declining. And it's scary as an investor, as we know. We buy something we think is a sweet deal, and then 60 days later, we got a comp that's 20 grand less, and it's consistent. The other thing, and this is almost the last point we get to make, is I don't know how you have a positive market. I'm not trying to be negative. When you have twice as many bank-owned properties heading back as you're selling, That's a problem we've never faced before. At the very worst in 96 and 97, we had twice as many sales as trustees deeds. Now we have twice as many trustees deeds as sales.
No, that's not true.
Well, it isn't Riverside. It is.
Maybe locally. Again, from the state level, we're looking, and we can argue about this, somewhere in the mid 200,000 ranges, and our current range of sales is in the mid 400,000 range. And again, my comment was I'm shocked by that many non-foreclosures selling because a lot of the rest of those obviously are short sales. So you've got a distress market that could be 75% statewide. But the fact of the matter is, if you can stay in the 250,000 range, that gets absorbed. If it goes up to 400,000 simply because prices are so low, then I think you have a much more serious problem.
Yeah. Yes, last comment.
You brought up the taking away the number of max finance properties earlier. And there are portfolio lenders out there that are coming to the table with that financing available. 30% down, 5-year fixed rate financing, and no limit for investors. These are all non-owner-occupied properties.
What's the rate?
In the low sevens, high sixes, right?
Okay,
now.
That's great.
Typically a one-year prepay.
Okay. I want to thank all of you. This has been a very extraordinary evening for everyone. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.